Unconventional Therapist's Guide to Nothing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unconventional Therapist. I am your host, Dave, and I am joined here with my co-host, Greg, as always, as we do every single time.
Happy to be here.
Haven't done this alone yet.
Why would you? Are you planning something?
Cannot wait for that day. Wow. Imagine that.
A solo app? It might not be the worst idea in the world.
I'll change the title on that day.
Unconventional Therapist? Just drop
it. I'll make it not plural. That'd be awesome.
Oh, man. No, you don't want to do that. We're a duo.
Yeah.
It would be dynamic.
That'd be weird.
Dave, I know you're going to be upset.
I am, because you're going to try to introduce the topic. But I want to ask you, Greg, before you do that.
Okay. All right.
How are you?
Real good.
How's your week been? You know, we're releasing on a Wednesday. We typically release on a Tuesday, which means we're recording on a day we don't usually record. Everything feels a little different today.
Feels a little off, doesn't it?
It feels weird, but I'm not going to lie. I feel more relaxed today than normal because the day that we're on is kind of just a little bit more relaxing for me.
Really? A Tuesday?
Well, I don't have the pressure to wake up as early, or I'd still wake up at the same time, but I don't have to like rush out of the house the way I do the next day because the way my Wednesdays work. Mm-hmm. So I feel a little bit at ease.
Well, I'm glad to hear it because I'm all wound up.
You sound wound up, Greg.
Tuesdays are my busy day.
Greg, you said something very interesting before we started recording about
as usual.
It wasn't as usual because like if it was, I probably would have been like, oh, that's usual Greg, you know?
Yeah.
Dropping gems. But no, you dropped a gem and I was like, wow, he hasn't done that in a very long time. And it had to do with like this idea of, I'll let you explain it, but essentially like doing something once versus doing it over and over, but it was a very different outcome than what people probably would expect.
Right. So we'll frame it in a different way, right? So say I'm a teacher, I teach a class, and if I was like, hey, look, I just need you guys to write one story at the end of the class, I just want that one story, and I might tell another class, I need you guys to hand in, at the end of this, as many stories as possible. You might think that the one story might be, you're thinking in your head, all right, so they're going to really craft, they're really going to hone this thing, and this one story is going to be perfect. But research and data says that the multiple stories is going to be the one that produce all better results. Like every one of those stories is going to be somehow better than that final product. And like, what is that saying, right? It's like, you can't just have this one goal and strive for perfection. It's like, you kind of have to have a lot. You have to be really working towards something. You have to be the act of, you know, honing the craft, making mistakes. It's all going to make things
better. That was my contribution to the conversation. I use the word honing.
I do. And you know, it's, what are your thoughts on that? Like, that's not what you would expect, right?
No, because normally I think when people give a message like, or give like a scenario like that, you think they're going to say like, you know, just take your time and focus on one thing at a time. But it's not about that. It's about like, you know, sometimes repetition. It's about, just trying to evolve and grow from each thing that you're creating. And also the pressure is less because the focus is different. The focus is more on like, I want to create something that like is going to continue. I'm going to keep working on this. So I have some time. I have, I want to create a bunch, but I have time to develop it as I go. Versus
plus
I just have this
less overthinking,
thing.
More doing, get action. Like you got to work right away. It's, and you know, it's funny. It's because like we're talking about something and somehow that is connected to what we're talking
about. Absolutely. Right? Cause like you think about people who only focus on one thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's like some perfectionism touch in there or just like a hyper focus. They have a hard time, you know, developing in more frequency. That's personality, right?
That is personality, Dave. And your suggested topic, something I had never heard of before, Enneagrams. And I
hope not my suggested topic because I actually hadn't heard of it either. Okay. We had two separate listeners recommend this. Male and a female. I don't remember the names off the top of my head. So I apologize. Yeah. It's actually, you know, as many of our recommendations are, like, we'll put them on the list and, you know, then it's on the list and I kind of forget where it comes from sometimes. So that it's been on the list for a little bit, but something felt very appropriate about this topic for today. You know, because we just did the Carl Jung episode and we have the character archetypes, right? Mm-hmm. And this is very much similar to Carl Jung and those archetypes types. And it feels like it's a natural progression for us to talk more about individuals and personality and this type of concept.
Yeah. When I saw this thing, I mean, the image of it, I started to wonder if your obsession with conjuring and Ouija boards had bled over to the podcast.
I thought it was a pentagram.
When you look at this thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like someone's trying to summon the dead. You draw this thing on the floor, you're going to access some other realms, whether you want to or not. Doesn't that what it looks like?
It does. It absolutely does. We should do an episode on the pentagrams.
I think we are right now. Right? So should I get into a little history of this thing?
You can try.
Okay, I'll try. And before we're going to get into the history. We're going to get into like what it actually is. And then we're going to try to get into the types. Okay. So the concern that you just kind of mentioned that it's a ripoff of Jung, it's put to rest pretty quickly because this thing could be as old as 4th century, right? A Christian mystic named Evagoras developed this concept of 8 deadly thoughts. And so there's obviously 9 personality types here, but there was one extra thought, and that was this idea of this overarching love for self. So there was 8, so there's 9 personality types this guy's talking about. He also had, which is interesting, 8 remedies to the 8 deadly thoughts. So this would develop into something we've talked about, sins and virtues, the 7 deadly sins, I guess you could say, right? It's also, Dave, something that you've talked about, opposite action and DBT, right? This is old. This is old stuff.
Yeah.
So
they ripped this off of me, I heard.
They did, yeah. Yeah, you're one of your ancestors, definitely came up with this. So that's where it kind of starts. The ideas, so this isn't, there's no shape of this yet. But then this guy, this philosopher, this Russian philosopher, G.I. Georgiev.
Or George.
Okay, probably easier, right?
I heard someone call him George.
He coins the term Enneagram. So he finds the word. And he uses this geometric figure, but he uses it for other purposes. It's not a personality thing yet.
Yeah.
He uses it for sacred dances. And it sounds very occult. It looks very occult. It's getting pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
Then this guy, Oscar, is just, how do you say it? Icazo?
De La Hoya?
Nope. Not the gorgeous boxer. You always found him. See, Oscar Icazo. So he's credited. This man actually, I think, has puts the most work in with the Enneagram, but he doesn't get the most credit. So he uses it for his teaching called proto-analysis. So here he's finally got the geometric figure, and he's going to add the personalities to it, right? So proto-analysis is this idea that a person's ego becomes fixated within the psyche at an early age. And this becomes our core self-image. So this, like, we decide who we are, or we're sort of led to decide who we are as a child. Mm-hmm. So we get fixated with who we think we are. And that kind of limits the possibilities of who we're supposed to be or who we could be.
And that totally makes sense in the realm of the purpose of the Enneagram, because it's all about identifying our characteristics and looking at, like, well, how do you work on expanding,
absolutely,
not just being that one thing, right?
Yeah. So, because Oscar, I'm going to go first same basis for a little bit here. Oscar thinks we become really rigid in our thinking, and we believe our personality is fixed, which is not at all. And that's a problem we see all the time, right? Like, who am I supposed to be? Why do I not feel like myself? But it's not supposed to be fixed. We feel this need to act a certain way, and then that can make us kind of inauthentic. So the point of the Enneagram, So one of the points of the Enneagram is to open the possibilities of our identity, almost like in the movie Elf, to forget who we think we are and become who we really are. And again, almost like ego death with the hallucinogen. So this stuff keeps coming around. Dave, when I think of this, I think the best way to describe it and to point out a way that it happens to all of us, politics. I think you and I are probably very different politically and in most ways. Say,
I'll let people take a guess what that means.
Okay. say I'm a Democrat or a Republican, right? There's going to be things that come up, and whether it's conscious or subconscious, that we're automatically going to agree or disagree with, even though we might not really believe that, because we've pigeonholed ourselves into this frame of reference. Like, this is my identity. This is my political party. This is how I feel, right? You can see how I'm a certain personality type. This is how I act.
Yeah. So because of who you are, I can assume you have certain viewpoints and vice versa.
Yep.
And also because of who I am, I assume certain viewpoints, even if, like, maybe I don't really believe them.
Right.
And you know what's interesting? And I'm seeing this happen a lot in today's society because of the way things have progressed over, let's say, the last, I don't know, 8 years.
I would say 12. I would say Obama, McCain, I would say, has noticed it the most.
Okay. I've noticed this in this political environment the most, people starting to break out of that a little bit and saying, well, I don't agree with that, but I'm starting to also not agree with some of this.
And
I don't know where that puts me. And people are getting confused and they're feeling a little upset because they don't feel like they have someone that really does share their actual views.
There's no beacon. There's no person where you're like, oh my God, like, it's okay to have these values. Like, it's okay to be sort of on the fence and be a normal person.
Yes. So I think this is going to be a really interesting, and not to talk politics, I think this is going to be a really interesting election year, because I feel like there's a lot of people that are starting to find themselves somewhere in the middle and they don't necessarily know which side supports them the best.
Right. Right.
So I'm just totally putting that out there. Yep.
Yeah, and no, that's not being political. That's just making an observation. That's what we do, right? You've talked about this before. I'll give you credit. Almost using political thought as, you know, likening it to the wise mind of DBT, right? Where there's an extreme way of thinking, an extremely negative way of thinking, a extremely rigid way of thinking, a extremely positive way of thinking, and then maybe like somewhere in the middle where we all kind of lie that, you know, it's more realistic. So, but back to proto-analysis. It's tangled up. It's interesting because it's ancient philosophy mixed with modern science. It's an interesting topic all on its own. But for now, we should probably focus on the main tool, right? The Enneagram.
Yeah, and just to kind of bring it to modern day, from what I understand, there's a Chilean psychiatrist named Claudio Naranjo.
Yeah, good job.
Is that how you would pronounce it?
Yeah.
Naranjo meaning oranges, I believe, in Spanish. I could be
maybe
wrong.
Yep.
But he
you could be wrong. Yeah.
I believe that he's done a lot of work on kind of bringing the Enneagram personality types model to the way that we kind of see it today and the way it's used today. So he's considered like a pioneer in the integration of psychotherapy and spiritual traditions, and was instrumental in bringing the Enneagram into the professional consulting arena.
Yeah.
Which is like, I think that says something about it in general, because you do hear a lot about it also associated not just with, you know, psychology, but with some sort of spirituality base. So I've heard some I've heard of Buddhist people using Enneagram. I've heard of it being influenced with Christian theology. You know, it's kind of, it definitely has like some spiritual guidelines that people are able to utilize as well, which I think is very fascinating.
Right. And Claudio sort of took it out of this hugely philosophical like frame and kind of simplified it, especially for his students. He was a professor at Berkeley. But Oscar felt really strongly that Claudio was really misusing the Enneagram. And I can just picture Claudio being like, it's not that deep. You know what I mean? Like, we're just kind of, we're talking about nine personalities.
Nine types, guy.
Yeah, like, take it easy. All right. I mean, this guy, I feel like, Oscar Chazo kind of is a kind of person that's like, the stars need to be lining up a certain way. He makes it very mystical, which is cool. But I think that this thing has its uses. But I also think that we've seen it before, and we'll talk about that later.
But Greg, this is what makes it so fascinating, is the fact that like it can fit in that mystic realm.
Totally.
And it can work and they can use it. It can fit in this like kind of stripped down, here's the 9 points, we're going to use it this way in, you know, therapy or whatever. It can fit into this. It can fit into so many different things. It's very adaptable. And it's existed for such a long time. I guess that's kind of why it's so adaptable. It's like, it's been adapted 1,000 times over already.
Yeah, I know. And it's cool. And I think we've seen traces of it in different forms. And maybe we'll talk about that later. Like, for example, the Zodiac. For sure. This guy's Zodiac. When we talk about like, when we go
the
through
Chinese the calendar, right? Yeah. When you go to Chinese restaurants and they have the, like the year of the dog.
I'm the dog. Oh, that's right. Same year. That makes sense. Okay.
No, I'm the dog.
Okay, great. I don't think you want to be the dog of all things.
Suddenly Dog the Bounty Hunter comes in. No, I'm the dog. Like, yes, you are. Yes, you are, sir.
If I had a dog, I'd walk into the room, but I don't. And that would. Anyways, what is this? What is an Enneagram? Like, basically, it's, you know, on its face, it's a 9-pointed symbol with an outer circle that has a triangle and a hexagon inside. So I'm naming some pretty mysterious shapes, right? It's supposed to classify personality.
What, triangle?
Well, when you start mixing all shapes together, it starts, you know, it's like that thing when you drag the pen around and make all these different, you know, have you ever seen that thing? Anyways,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Totally.
It's supposed to classify personality into 9 types. Or, Dave, get this. Instead of types, I would say approaches that we use to navigate the world. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, so if you're...
I would say 9 ways of being.
Okay. Okay, fine. Well, you say that and I'll say approaches or strategies, right? Because each of these approaches has its own fears, desires. And here's something important about knowing your own type can allow you to predict your own behavior, but also can allow you to predict the behavior of other people. And we're going to talk more about that. It's because it's not just, I liken this sort of to the love languages, where it's not just about knowing your personality. It's about understanding other people's personality and why they're doing the things they do and making, you know, maybe making communication a little bit better.
Pretty glad I introduced you to the love languages, huh?
I love love language. I talk about it all the time.
I love love.
Yeah. Love love.
Hey, Greg, do you know what Ennea means?
No.
9.
Damn. That's right.
You know what grandma means? Like the Greek word grandma. Since it's anagram.
Word.
Figure. It means figure. Okay. So 9 figure.
Okay, Dave.
AKA 9 types, 9 people, 9 personalities.
And 9's sort of like a mystic number.
You're still going with that.
I think it is. It's compiled of 3s, which is...
What does that even mean?
You know, dude, as soon as I said that, I was hoping you would ask me anything like that. So you just would have like gone with it.
It's not a ghost. A mystic is true. A ghost, Greg.
It's true. It's true. well, look, I don't know. You could definitely make it religious.
Definitely. Yeah.
Multiples of 3 is always sort of religious. And
yeah, it's an angel number.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that. I just made that up.
It's so funny. Someone said an angel number to me today. I think an angel number can be very specific to the person. Like that, like 97 could be an angel number to me because it's the number of the house I grew up at. I don't know how angel numbers work. Maybe that's a conversation for another time. We shouldn't get into it if we don't know about it, Dave. We've been told.
Yeah.
Okay. So how's this thing work? So there's a couple different ways it can work. Well, you can read through them and perform a sort of self-assessment, or you can do what we did and take a little test, but we took different tests and we'll see what happened there.
Sure.
But once you find your place, you can see your wings. Now, Dave, I'm just going to gloss over wings real quick, but then I want you to kind of get into what they are.
Sure.
Exactly.
Right. Sure.
So the wings basically are just the adjacent types. So if you're a number 3 personality, then a number 2 and a number 4 are your wings. And all these compiled together, your main type and your wings influence your personality, your behavior. It's a combination of your dominant type, and your wings should paint a picture of your personality. That's the whole point, right? So, and the point isn't to marry yourself to a personality like we've done in the past, but to better understand yourself and to better understand the people around you. Knowing your personality, you're like, do I like that that's my personality? Does that seem like it fits who I want to be? And if not, maybe I got to start doing some different things. All right. Yeah. So what the hell is a wing?
All right. So I don't know. Okay. But here's the best way I can describe it. So basically, no one is just one personality type. No, not just one pure personality type, right? So you get this number, this dominant number. But then there's, like, as you described, the wings. So everyone's a unique mixture of these, like, you know, basic types. And one of the adjacent types is called your wing, basically. So there's the basic type that dominates your overall personality, while the wing complements it and adds important, sometimes contradictory elements to your total personality. Your wing is the second side of your personality, and it must be taken into consideration to better understand yourself or someone else. So, Greg, you gave an example. I'm going to give another one. If your personality type is 9, you are likely to have a 1 wing or an 8 wing. And your personality as a whole can be best understood by considering the traits of the 9 as they uniquely blend with the traits of the 1 or the 8. This is all very confusing because we're just throwing out numbers. Let's get into what the numbers mean, Greg.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
You know, one of the things I've been thinking about lately is how effective just talking can be.
Yeah, so many of people hold on to things, Dave. We bottle them down. You know, we feel our problems aren't big enough to need therapy, but this is the furthest thing from the truth.
And I know for me, therapy allowed me to have a space to discuss things I hadn't really discussed with anyone before.
That's true, Dave. And I wonder about some of those things you were talking about. It sparked my interest a little bit. But one of the greatest benefits of therapy is having your own space and being able to express whatever it is you've been holding on to.
With how convenient access is in today's day and age, there's absolutely no reason not to try therapy.
Exactly. And BetterHelp is one of the most convenient ways to give it a try. It's completely online and will work around your schedule, so you don't ever have to leave your house.
And the best part of it, if you don't get that tingly feeling from your selected therapist, you can switch it up with no fee.
Or maybe if you do get that tingly feeling, you might want to switch it up. But BetterHelp understands how important it is that you feel connected with your therapist.
So get it off your chest with BetterHelp.
And visit betterhelp.com/nothing today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/nothing.
Yeah. And before we do, so it's like, it's one of those things that now you're really reminding me of Zodiac. Cause it's like when you say you have a personality type and then other personality types that might be contradictory to it. And that's always been my beef with like Zodiac's symbols, because someone will be like, oh, I'm a Taurus. So I'm like stubborn, but I'm also kind of shy and nice too. And it's like, yeah, can we all kind of do, once you add contradictory sort of elements to your personality, don't we all fit into that in a way? I don't know. It just feels kind of like on the nose. But yes. You know,
it's crazy though, because doing this, I kind of knew where I should fall. And like, I did fall pretty on the nose with how I see myself.
Me too.
All right. So I want to do this because like, as I was researching this, when I wasn't looking at visual Enneagrams, it was really hard for me to follow along with what they were saying as far as describing like 1 and 9s and 8s and all that stuff. So I want everyone to just to envision a circle, right? And 1 through 9 is all around. It almost looks like a pie chart, right? But with like equal parts. Mm-hmm. Now, each, like, you know, let's say 1 is to start. You're in the part that's 1, the slice that is 1. And let's say it's your dominant 1. That slice is now going to turn a lot larger than the rest of the, you know, of the those portions, right? So that one's going to be your dominant. And then as we were talking about with the wings, you're then going to get 2 extensions from that one. So it's going to turn into like a triangle, like Greg said, and it's going to point to 2 different numbers. And those numbers are going to be slightly larger than the rest of the numbers that are left, but still smaller than the dominant one, if that makes any sense. So envision a pie chart and kind of envision these portions being like who you are. That makes sense. Greg, did I describe that okay?
You did. And do you think, as you're describing it, yeah, you're really painting a picture, because I'm thinking now, is the perfect person, if there could be such a thing, is enlightenment
equal pie chart?
That's right. Complete balance.
No, that's a okay. That's a non-existent person, I would say. Okay. Because then you have zero personality because everything's just equal. I think what gives us personality and uniqueness is the fact that we're all these different equivalents, right?
So maybe when we're doing it, like someday down the road, this will be the test to see if someone's AI.
Take this Enneagram, you robot.
Oh, it's equal pie. No, right? Yeah, that's
the perfect person. All right.
You do exist. So, all right, we better get into this.
We're getting into the nine types here. So we're each going right. to break this down a little bit. So I'll do the first three. Okay. The first one, numero uno, the reformer. What is the reformer, you may ask? This is a rational, idealistic type, principled, purposeful, self-controlled, perfectionist. They're the person only doing one thing, maybe. I don't know. That was very judgmental of me. I'm sorry. They're conscientious, ethical. They have a strong sense of right and wrong. They could be teachers, crusaders, advocates for change. They're always striving to improve things. But they're afraid of making mistakes, which goes into that perfectionist part, right?
Yeah.
They could be well-organized, orderly, fastidious. They try to maintain high standards and can slip into being critical and perfectionistic. They have problems. They typically have problems with resentment and impatience. Their basic fear is of being corrupt, evil, or defective. Their basic desire is to be good, to have integrity, to be balanced. An Enneagram 1 with a 9 wing is called the idealist. What does that mean? I don't know. An Enneagram with a 2 wing is called the advocate. So you see how like they start to blend to like the other numbers blend. And they kind of also like shift the direction of what the dominant one turns is, you know.
Type. Yeah, yeah.
Their key motivation is they want to be right. They want to strive for higher and improve. They want to strive higher and improve everything. They want things to be consistent with their ideals, to justify themselves, and to be beyond criticism so as not to condemn anyone.
Okay.
Greg, you're a one.
No, I'm not.
I know you're not. I'm just kidding. Psych.
Definitely not a perfectionist.
Numero dos. The helper. This caring interpersonal type is demonstrative, generous, people-pleasing, and possessive. Twos are empathetic, sincere, and warm-hearted. They're friendly, generous, and self-sacrificing, but also can be sentimental, flattering, and people-pleasing. They are well-meaning and driven to be close to others, but can slip into doing things for others in order to be needed. They typically have problems with possessiveness and with acknowledging their own needs. At their best, they're unselfish and altruistic. They have unconditional love for others. You know how I feel about altruism, though. I don't think it exists. Basic fear of being unwanted, unworthy, or being loved. Their basic desire is to feel loved. An Enneagram 2 with a 1 wing is a servant. An Enneagram 2 with a 3 wing is the host or hostess. I'm not going to read those going forward because that's getting ahead of ourselves. Their key motivation is they want to be loved, to express feelings for others, to be needed and appreciated, to get others to respond to them, and to vindicate their claims about themselves. Interesting characters, those twos.
Mm-hmm.
I do say so. Numero tres, the achiever. They are success-oriented, pragmatic types, adaptive, excelling, driven, and image-conscious. Threes are self-assured, attractive, and charming. Ambitious, competent, and energetic. They can also be status conscious and highly driven for advancement. They're diplomatic and poised, but can also be overly concerned with their image and what others think of them. They typically have problems with workaholism and competitiveness. At their best, they're self-accepting, authentic. Everything they seem to be role models who inspire others. So their basic fear is of being worthless. Their basic desire is to feel value and worthwhile. Their key motivations are they want to be affirmed, to distinguish themselves from others, to have attention, to be admired, and to impress others.
Hmm. Okay. So I'll get into number four. Okay. If you don't mind, Dave.
Numero cuatro.
Numero quattro, right. The individualist, unique, sensitive, and introspective, honest and obsessed with authenticity, creative, artistic, moody, and self-absorbed. Their basic fear, so I'm going through these a little bit quicker. The basic fear is having no identity or significance, and their basic desire is to find meaning in their experiences, which is kind of unfair because I think that's everyone's basic desire. But okay, that's the individualist. The investigator, curious, observant, perceptive, very interested in learning, very analytical, private, and likes to, you know, stay to themselves and contemplate. They tend to isolate and can struggle with social interactions. So it's sort of an introvert is what Jung would have said. Fear is to be useless or helpless, and their desire is to become competent and capable. The next one's the loyalist. And this is someone who, and see, some of these, the names of them are sort of misleading sometimes, because this is someone who's concerned with safety and planning and problem solving, very responsible, and they like clearly defined roles. So cautious and protective. This is sort of like an anxious type person, I think. And a suspicious type person. They're prone to paranoia and a fear. Their basic fear is to have no security, right? So to be unsafe. And I think they want to be taken care of. The desire is just to be safe, to have security, right? So that's Cuatro, Cinco, and Seis.
Numero Siete.
Yes.
Enthusiast. Busy, fun-loving type. Spontaneous, versatile, distractible, and scattered. Sevens are extroverted, optimistic, versatile, and spontaneous. They typically have problems with impatience and impulsiveness. Their basic fear is of being deprived and in pain. The basic desire is to be satisfied and content and to have their needs fulfilled. Their key motivation is usually to want to maintain their freedom and happiness, to avoid missing out on worthwhile experiences, and to keep themselves excited and occupied, and to avoid and discharge pain.
Mm-hmm. So avoid pain.
To avoid and discharge pain. Okay. Discharge pain. I don't know why that word was there, but okay.
So the challenger. That's why I just wanted to like just say avoid pain, clear that up. But you wanted to double down. Discharge pain.
Discharge pain is what I said.
The challenger. Number eight is the challenger or controller, which isn't a very
Or Ocho.
Assertive, powerful, effective leaders. These are your presidents of the United States. Like for real, if we're talking politics. Tough and independent, capable of making hard decisions. Your business leaders, your CEOs, right?
Good for nothing tricksters.
They're tricksters, maybe, right? Liars. No, I'm just kidding. Although they want to come to the aid of others, they can be seen as overbearing. So their fear is to be controlled, but their desire is to be in control and maybe to control, you know? Mm. So eight, the challenger. Okay. Nine, Dave. The sacred, mystical number nine.
Nueve, the peacemaker. This is an easygoing, self-effacing type. Receptive, reassuring, agreeable, and complacent. They're usually creative, optimistic, and supportive, but can also be too willing to go along with others to keep the peace. They want everything to go smoothly and without conflict. They can also tend to be complacent, simplifying problems and minimizing anything upsetting. I definitely think there was a young archetype figure that was similar to this.
Similar to most of them.
Yeah, their basic fear is of loss and separation, the basic desire to have inner stability or peace of mind. And basically, their key motivation is to create harmony in their environment, to avoid conflicts, tension, and to preserve things as they are, to resist whatever would upset or disturb them. So those are all the types. Those are the nine types.
I'm starting to get a better understanding of what this thing is, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Those sort of, like, you read all those, and on one hand, you could say, oh yeah, like you're describing, that could be describing anyone. But I think as you go through, you can kind of be like, oh no, that's me. That one's kind of me, right? Like, cause I have, you know, what's funny is I took the test and it picked one for me. But I think as I do my own self-assessment, I think I am a different one than the test. And I'm curious to think like who you think I am. Cause I think I know who you are as far as numbers
go. Oh boy.
Yeah. All right. So, anyways, we don't have to start with that. Do you want to start with that?
Where do we start with that?
Okay. Well, let's do that. Let's do that. That may be fun, and then we can get into the centers and our final thoughts on this thing.
Yeah.
So, should I say what I think you are?
Yeah. Let's guess each other, and then we can kind of talk about what we actually are.
Okay. So, you are number two. Right?
Okay.
That's what I think.
That's just blanket.
Yeah, no, you're a helper. I can't really get into all of it because I didn't write it all down. But I think that when I was reading number two, I wrote down number two as Dave.
Okay.
And is that kind of what you got when you took the test?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you could have just asked me.
I feel like yours is, let me just go back for a second and make sure I have it correct. I want to say you're number three. Mm-hmm. And the part I'm trying to make the the workaholism,
yeah.
They're diplomatic and poised, you know, driven, image conscious, maybe, but more just kind of that drive and ambition and just you're driven for advancement. So I felt like that kind of fit your personality, in my opinion.
So when I took the test, I was kind of taking it offhanded and Natasha was reading me the questions and I was just answering them. It gave me the eight.
An eight?
Yep. And when I went through, and when I have it written down here in my notes, when I went through and I did my self-assessment, I gave myself a three.
Yeah.
So I felt like I linked up with three more than anything. And when I read eight, I said that doesn't really describe me at all.
Yep. So the test you had, unfortunately, the one you did didn't give you like your smaller like domains.
Yeah, like it didn't give me a spectrum.
And mine did. So I can share a little bit of that just to kind of give an idea of what that looks like. So my dominant one was two, the helper. As soon as I read that, I was like, yeah, of course, rolling my eyes at myself. And four came up next as four and six were two equal parts after that. So the individualist.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatic, self-absorbed,
yeah.
Temperamental.
And the anxious little loyalist.
Yeah, I was surprised by four and then the loyalist. But then I also got nine was also on there. And that one made sense to me because I'm definitely that non-confrontational, kind of wanting to keep the peace kind of person as well. So that one made sense. I didn't really get four. But again, one of the things I wanted to bring up that we, you know, I was telling you, Greg, before we start to record was as much as like you can take a test and that helps you get a sense of who you are or where you fit in this. It really should be like more of an exploratory type deal rather than just like relying on like, oh, I did this test in 15 minutes and this is what I got. Because I feel like with the test, well, first of all, there's a ton of them. Like mm-hmm. we took two separate ones, you know, just by chance. I feel like there's way more. There's workbooks, there's actual books, there's websites. There's so many resources for this. There's so many different sources. So you don't know you're getting like the most accurate, but also as you're answering them, a lot of that is dependent on mood,
mm-hmm.
day, how strongly I feel about something in this moment right now. And also a little bit of honesty. And as I'm taking it, I'm like passing judgment on some of the questions. And that's impacting my ability to get an accurate score. Because there's some things that I'm like, I think, so the scale for mine was like 1 to 5 and 3 was neutral, right? So it would ask you like how you feel about this certain thing. I put neutral for so many.
Yeah.
And some of it's like, I don't even know. I would have to think about that more. Or some of it's like, I don't really want to put like, I feel, because I don't care about that thing. So I guess I am neutral. But like also some of it was like, yeah, I don't want to admit that. So maybe I would put this.
Well, what about the idea that like, I get what you're saying. Like, but what about the idea that instead of using this to figure out who you are, isn't it a little more important to figure out who you want to be? We've talked about that all the time. So when you're looking at this thing and you say, all right, well, look, I'm a number nine, or I'm a number two, I'm a helper, or I'm an individualist, or I'm a loyalist, whatever. It's like, I think I'm really landing on loyalist, but I admire people who are, you know, a challenger. And so maybe I need to, you know, be less of this type and be more of that type and start, you know, adding on some of those characteristics to your personality, right? So this is a super useful tool to identify where you're at in your life and also where you want to be, because you might be a certain way based on the way you were treated in your life, that your circumstances. That doesn't necessarily mean that's who you want to be. And you know, identifying that and finding a path to change that, this thing could be a really useful tool for that. So yeah, it's another opportunity you know, as we talked about a million times, diversify your identity. It should be bigger. It shouldn't, you shouldn't feel inauthentic in trying to be different than you are, right?
Sure. The other part of this is like, you could look at this in like a group atmosphere as well. I think I mentioned this last week in Young's episode, but also, you know, think about like work tests that you get sometimes. There's a lot of this stuff going on where they're trying to like get your work type. You could look at this as like how we balance each other. So if I know you're this and this, you know, that it's great to kind of find someone who's this and this. So it mm-hmm. like kind of balances out in like the workplace or, you know, in relationships.
Relationships. Like, absolutely. As you're saying that, that's good. That's beautiful. Like that could work perfectly.
Yeah.
And like, you could even put it on your resume. Like, I'm a number two. So
I bet people do it in the workplace. I guarantee you people do.
I can guarantee you like younger generations are putting their Enneagram numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. On their resume.
I think it's also like, I like this
number
idea.
Number two, looking
like,
for number four.
I like the idea of like identifying like basic fears and basic desires. I like the idea of having the duality of like the good and the pros and the cons of mm-hmm. these personality types. So it's like, yeah, I'm this thing and there's like so many great qualities. Here's things I need to watch out for that I'm like prone to, and you know, absolutely that's there. And let me challenge myself to like not fall into those ruts. Like it brings some self-awareness to who we are.
100%.
And like you said, it can engage us in trying to figure out, well, who else do I want to be?
Well, you know how we kind of compared it to the zodiac or astrology? It's, you know, the problem with that is it's like, oh, I'm a Taurus, so I'm stubborn. And it's almost like I have to be stubborn. But with this, it's like, yeah, you fall into one of these groups, but you can switch over. Like, so I don't have to just be a Taurus. I can also be a Sagittarius.
Yeah.
It's like, if I identify more with that, no, I'm actually not a Taurus. I'm a Sagittarius. Like, it doesn't matter what you say, right? I admire those traits, so that's who I want to be. So it's like astrology, but it's not left up to fate, or it's a little more powerful that because you can change that, which is kind of fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's this, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I'm going to give a brief idea of what this means, but there's this thing called the centers.
Okay.
So the Enneagram is a 3x3 arrangement of 9 personality types in 3 centers. These types are the instinctive center. There's 3 types in the instinctive center, 3 types in the feeling center, and 3 in the thinking center. This is similar again to Jung. He had it set up in like little groups. Each center consists of 3 personality types that have in common the assets and liabilities of that center. So this is, for example, the personality type 4 has unique strengths and liabilities involving its feelings, which is why it's in the feeling center. Likewise, the 8's assets and liabilities involve its relationship to instinctual drives, which is why it's in the instinctive center, and so forth for all 9 personality types. So Greg, which one is 8 fall into? There's instinctive, feeling, and thinking.
Which one do we fall into? Because we must be in the same one, 2 and 3. Dead air.
No, dead air. I'm trying to figure that out. All right. I don't know. Okay. Oh, wait. I do have the answer. Duh. It's right in front of me. 8 is instinctive. So when you got 8, right? Originally in your test.
Originally, yeah. But I'm a 3. Identify as a 3. And that's okay.
Identify as a three. Yeah, so eight falls into the instinctive if that's what you get. All right, so just looking at what your type was, for example. So threes try to deny their shame and are potentially the most out of touch with underlying feelings of inadequacy. Threes learn to cope with shame by trying to become what they believe is a valuable, successful person. Threes learn to perform well, to be acceptable, even outstanding, and they are often driven relentlessly in their pursuit of success as a way of staving off feelings of shame and fears of failure. Wow, that really is depressing.
Damn,
right?
Dude.
That just made me look at you in a different light. I'm sorry for everything you're dealing with right now.
Yeah. Me too.
Me too. All right, I'll read mine just to make you feel better. Hold on. Let's find two. All right. In the feeling center, of course, feelings. Twos attempt to control their shame. Oh, it's all about shame. Damn it. By getting other people to like them and to think of them as good people. This is horrible. They also want to convince themselves that they're good, loving people by focusing on their positive feelings for others while repressing their negative feelings, such as anger and resentment at not being appreciated enough. As long as twos can get their positive emotional responses from others, they feel wanted and are able to control feelings of shame. All right. So, yeah. So going back to what the centers is all about, like the instinctive center, in the instinctive center, the emotion is anger or rage. In the feeling center, the emotion is shame. And in the thinking center, it is fear. So with these centers, there's like this emotional, like negative emotional experience that is kind of like, it feels like it's a driving force for a lot of that personality type. So, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I would talk about that in the same terms as Jung's shadow.
Yeah.
Like that's what we don't really want to look at ourselves. So we kind of project a different personality and we never really face those things. Yeah. And they sort of drive our behavior until we address them.
So do you, it's interesting though, because like, all right, so each, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, there's these, they're all broken down into centers, the numbers. Mm-hmm. And then at the core of each center is this emotion that's driving. There's this emotional theme that's kind of driving a lot of the personality. Do you think that can be accurate, that like everyone who's a two, a three, or whatever else is in the feeling center, that emotional theme could be like shame, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably make that case for most people. I mean, that's what Freud's trying to say. Always, right?
But everybody in the instinctive center, that emotional theme is going to be anger or rage. Doesn't it feel very like...
No, it's too pigeonholed.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know, if that feels, to me, the center's piece feels a little bit like it loses me.
Yep.
But with that being said, me and Greg are filled with shame. So apparently. Maybe it is accurate.
And I know as you say that, I'm like, am I?
I have
to. So that's what you need to... Like some. That's what sometimes... Just knowing your personality type can drive your behavior too, right? It's almost like you want people to write this thing, write their personalities down without any prompting, but that's kind of impossible too. Because when we think it's very important to discover people's values. And if you just sit there and ask someone their values, they're gonna have a hard time. But if you lay out some values, they might be able to identify with them better. So I mean, this thing has its uses, right? It's built to sort of help you learn yourself, communicate better with others. Maybe for your purposes, Dave, accidentally communicate with spirits if you draw it on your rug. But put it this way. Is it accurate? Well, most professionals are still using the MBTI, which we touched on last week. And it's based on Jung's work. So the results are usually comparable, but it's still Jung's work is still preferred. And I know that a mystic was talking about this stuff in the 4th century, but this stuff wasn't put together before Jung. Jung had his archetypes written down before this was in any literature. So that's important to know too.
Yeah. When they say, like, when they're talking about the origin of this, there's forms of this that mm-hmm. get, like we said, yeah. It evolves over time. But like the version of it that we're dealing with now is, well, I don't know what year exactly. Claudio.
Yes, I think 70s.
Okay.
So when Young's operating in the 30s and 40s. So, but you know, Evagoras or the Seven Deadly Sins, those sound with virtues, even like, you know, Aristotle's, you know, virtues, those are archetypes.
Yeah.
Right. Seven Deadly Sins are archetypes, just like the darker side of them. So there's a lot of interesting things.
You know, who is the originator of all this?
Moses.
Yes. Moses, okay. Dude. Moses.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of. Right.
The tablets, you know,
the tablets. Yeah. Moses is an extremely important figure, though. I actually watched on Netflix that Moses show.
Yeah.
The Moses show.
How was that?
It was pretty good, I gotta admit. I honestly think it would be fun to do like the 10 plagues and like what
those. I feel like we have to do a Moses episode just because I've mentioned him on so many episodes.
So much to do if we did it. You know, like basic. So we could talk about objective morality. That's what those things are. So it's like, this is how you be a good person. And it kind of takes that out of. You know, so like if you follow these rules, you go to heaven and you don't go to hell. What is the benefit? Like, so you take that away, right? So that's what Nietzsche was talking about when he said, God is dead. What are we going to do now, right? He's not saying making some atheist statement. He's saying, how do we know what's good if we take religion out of the equation?
Yeah.
That's a hard question.
This is such a larger topic that I have a lot of developing thoughts on. And okay. It's so funny because last week we did our group supervision in our practice, and we were talking about someone who was experiencing anxiety over death and over death in general. My question was like, is he religious? And they said, no, not really. And I feel like that's part of the problem.
Yep.
Because like religion gives us a basic idea or hope or some idea that like maybe in our afterlife there's more, maybe there's a purpose to all we're doing. It makes everything feel a little bit more meaningful. We're working towards something, which, you know, meaning and purpose is so important in our lives. So when you take away religion, which is, you know, what's happening a lot in the world today, we're moving away from, you know, organized religion and spirituality a little bit, and you don't replace that with anything. Now you just have a bunch of young people thinking like, wow, what is the point of any of this?
Yep.
If I am just going to turn into nothing and just,
right. Yeah.
There's nothing to work for.
There's like this great, I remember this guy asking these questions because we're all about trying to figure out meaning, and sometimes it's hard to get to the crux of it for people. And he was asking questions like, what do you want to exist even when you don't? And you can think, as you talk, you're making me think of generations past. They would have said the church, the country, like, yeah. But younger kids these days, they don't have something that's so big and so meaningful to them that they want it to exist even when they don't.
And religion, you know, organized religion has its downfalls. Yes, obviously. And I'm not like pitching that, you know, we need to bring back or like our drive to have these large organized religions. There are people who still practice. There's a lot of people who have stepped away from practicing in organized religions. What I do think is a problem, though, is we don't have anything that takes its place. And I've said this on previous episodes where it like takes that whole group identity away and it turns us into this individualistic society where we're all so hyper-focused just on our own needs and getting our own needs and desires met. And there's no group goal or drive or unity,
and that's not good for society.
No, it's not.
It's not.
I
right?
think we're seeing that
morality isn't something that exists for the individual. Morality is something that's useful only in terms of perpetuating a society, right? So, like, because it's not good for me. Like, if you have something that I want, it's good for me to kill you and take it. That's, you know, that's good for me.
Think about,
it's not good for the masses, right?
Think about, you know, the story of why like the Ten Commandments were needed. What was happening in order for them to need to have these Ten Commandments?
Just killing each other.
Just killing each other. It's like, I want that. Give that to me. Stab, stab.
Right. Like, yeah. Like I'm thirsty. No, you have water. Give me, you know, and that wasn't bad.
And you know what? I've always said in my own life, you know, as I went from growing up in organized religion to like becoming non-practicing and then, you know, going through a whole existential and just kind of like questioning religion and all that stuff. I've always said, like, I don't necessarily need a book to tell me right and wrong or to make me a good person. But you know what I do start to think nowadays? I don't need it, but I think some others do.
Yep.
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And I do think that while I can trust myself to make certain judgments and decisions, I don't know that every single person can do that without having some kind of structured, you know, reason.
No, yeah, it definitely provided some nice like guidance, and
it probably helped with temptation a little bit. Like if I knew I was there's temperance. A response, then maybe I will do this thing. And if there isn't if there is no response and I'm tempted, maybe I'm more likely to want to do it.
We joke around about Catholic guilt, but guilt has its place too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll feel guilty if I do that. It's not the worst emotion in the world.
If it prevents me from doing something wrong.
Right? I mean,
that's hard.
If it prevents you from hurting somebody, we don't want to lose those things, really. Yeah. So anyways, probably a little. I told you this is spiritual.
Damn you, Greg.
I told you. So somehow we ended on that. But Dave, an interesting topic, I think. It provides for, you know, it's thought-provoking conversation starter. Yeah.
I really appreciate the people that recommended this episode. Like I said, there was two. One was a more recent one, and then one was a few months back. I'm glad we got around to it. So thank you for that recommendation. This was great to explore. This is one of those that I know is going to end up creeping into my work. As we talk about, sometimes our topics tend to, like, after we do it, then it's like we find, you know, the following few weeks or months we're bringing it up in sessions, you know, pretty consistently. Yeah. I have a feeling that that could happen a little bit with this, because this is rather interesting.
This reminds me of Joan of Arc, what you're saying right now. Like, yeah, somehow we shoehorn like every topic into sessions.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. So thank you for that. And, you know, as always, for people who reach out to us, if you have ideas, definitely throw them by us. We will add them to our list and get around to them at some point, as this now demonstrates. But then there's been a few other listener recommendations that we've dabbled in. All right, so let's wrap up, but let's first, before we do, Greg, what's going on with the reviews and the ratings and all that stuff? Are you pleased finally?
We need more.
Jeez.
we need more. And
wow, also, so blunt.
Yeah. And if you did, you mention subscribing to our page, because something's coming around the bend, especially to those people that have been with us for a few months now.
Yeah. So where the moves are finally starting to happen, or the things that are going to allow these moves are finally starting to happen. So for people who aren't already aware, but most of you, I'm sure, are, we have a subscription page where you can subscribe a monetary donation amount for. However much you are willing to, and any amount is appreciated, that money is going to help to just keep this thing going, but also at some point provide us that ability to give back to our listeners, which we're working on developing. So that we have a few subscribers already who we super appreciate. Thank you so much for that. And anybody else who is interested, you can find our subscriptions page. If you Google Unconventional Therapist Guide to Nothing, Buzzsprout subscriptions, I think it comes up, or there's a link on our social media to get to there. Speaking of social media, check us out on Instagram, on X, formerly Twitter. We post about our episodes. Sometimes Greg puts up quotes and stories and other random artifacts. So yeah, check us out on there. But as we mentioned with the ratings and reviews, they're super appreciated, because it really does help get this out to a wider audience with, you know, that's just how it works, I guess. I don't know. Algorithms is what I was looking for.
Science.
But on Spotify, tons of ratings, which we appreciate so much. It's actually overwhelming when I looked at the number. I'm like, damn, that's growing. So thank you all so much for that. If you've already done it, if you haven't, if you could just take 2 seconds and do that on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening, super appreciated. We'll be back next week. And next week is a doozy of an episode.
It is.
Huge. Oh, yeah.
Oh, great.
I'm already nervous. The week after that, we're going to get back to our literature roots. So that one I'm looking forward to as well. I think that one was a nice little break. And then after that, maybe we'll get into some true crime. So big variety coming up. But next week, just wait. It's going to, it's an important one. So
hold on to your hats. Nothing.
Say hold on to your hats.
That's right.
Hold on to your golf caps.
That's right. Driving cap.
Your driving cap? I call it a Pepe cap. That's what you wear.
I had a Pepe and he wore one of these.
Yep. I had a Pepe and he wore one of those too.
Rip.
Rip.
Kids say. Yeah.
Yep. All right, everybody. Have a great night on that note. And we'll see you later. Stay beautiful. Stay lovely. Stay kind.
That's right. All right.